Hi, my name is Dev Hines. I play as Lightspeed Champion.
Tell me a little bit, give me the little history that people don't know, because I mean, I've got the one sheet and everything else, but tell me from you a little bit about music and where you came from and how you formed Test Icicles and why you deformed Test Icicles and how you invented the new Lightspeed Champion identity.
I've always kind of, I played the piano when I was about five, because I used to follow my sister around, and my sister started going to piano lessons. And then she like stopped going to piano lessons, and I carried on. And at age eight, nine, I started playing the cello. So and then I took the cello on up until second year of high school. From first year of high school, I started playing the drums. So I played drums then in a couple punk bands and hardcore bands like in school. At the same time, I then started playing bass because I was playing cello in the orchestra. You know, if you're 13, 14 playing cello, that obviously means to play bass, and you're the designated bass.
Anything that's a tall stringed instrument becomes your destiny.
Yeah, so I was playing bass in a few bands, and then the first live performance I ever did actually was in a band called Sasquatch, covering Say It Ain't So by Weezer, and then I think the second song we did was Surf Rax America by Weezer, and I played bass for that, and I also sang for a bit. Then I was still playing, coming out of school, so maybe 15, 16, I started playing drums for another hardcore band, and at the same time during all this time, I write songs by myself, and always different genres, it's always whatever comes to my head, working out arrangements or you know what have you. And then started singing for a band called The New Tom Cruise Film, if I remember correctly. I just sang for that band. Then shortly after that, I played drums for a band called This Time Around, which then overlapped into singing for a band called The Red and Sophie Loren. I had to change it to Sophie because obvious reasons. And we actually toured loads. Around that time, I started becoming friends with a guy called Ferry, who's in a band at the moment called Semi-Finalist. Ferry and Chris, a guy called Tom Veck, who played drums in a band called Poverty Jet Sets, which had, he was a drummer in Ferry's band at the time. And we're like 17, and so yeah, he played in that band. And Sam, Rory, who in Test Icicles, we all met around that time. We started hanging out, and we'd all form bands kind of every other week, you know, because we realized we all could play different instruments, and we all like different stuff. So we'd be, you know, we'd be bored at night, and we'd think, hey, let's record an R&B album. And so we'd record like a really slick R&B album. Then we'd be like, hey, because a lot of our friends were putting on clubs, so we'd say, we'll ask them if we can play the next week, and we'd go and play, and you know, we'll play the album that we wrote the other night. And that was it, and we'll go and do it. We did it time and time again. There was Tyrannosaurus Jerk, Manpower, I'm trying to remember all the names. Intense Dudes, Balls, and it's interesting. Coming up to Intense Dudes, basically what happened with Intense Dudes. I was still touring in Red and Sophie Loren at the time, but Intense Dudes happens. Intense Dudes, Johnny Burrell in a guide in London said seeing Intense Dudes was the best gig he'd seen in London. But bear in mind, this is just another one of those one band things that we just did for fun. Label people then, because it was around the time Razor were getting hyped to the first album, went to Intense Dudes. The guy from Intense Dudes is in a band called Damn Arms in Australia, had to go back to Australia for visa reasons. Intense Dudes disbanded after their second gig. Then Balls rose from the ashes of Intense Dudes. Balls then had a gig supporting the Unicorns up in Nottingham. And Ferry, who's a semi-finalist now, had to go back to Indonesia to renew his visa. So he told the guy called Ricky Haley, who incidentally on the last UK tour was the tour manager for Semi-Finalists that we did, which I was the basis for Semi-Finalists. But that's the future. Then, Balls booked to support Unicorns, couldn't do it. Ferry then said, I would just book a band, who's going to play? And he said, Test Icicles will play. He made the name up on the spot and booked Test Icicles to play with the Unicorns. And then he called us and he's like, hey, you know, we're all huge Unicorns fans. And he's like, you want to go see the Unicorns for free? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay, just play. I booked a gig as Test High Schools. He's in Indonesia. So we just did another one of these things. We just went one Thursday, just made four tracks. One of them was actually Circle Square Triangle, which later became on the album. It's probably the song most people knew. But that was the second song we ever wrote that day on the Thursday. And we then booked, the Unicorns gig was on the Sunday. So, okay, we wrote these songs on the Thursday. Then we used to make up outfits, like balls playing in tennis gear, and we'd make outfits up. So we then thought, okay, if it's on a Sunday, we're gonna need to pay for our ticket. So our friend was booking shows on the Saturday in Brighton. So we booked a show with a band called Yibarobo on Saturday. And then on the Tuesday, like a friend of ours did a club called White Heat, which is a club that's been very good to us in London, and they said we can play. So it was these three dates booked. So we made our outfits, which was like white. We made white tight jeans, and we wore yellow, pink, blue t-shirts, and each one had a circle, a square, and a triangle, which is where the title of that song came from. And we went and played on that Saturday, and then we played on Sunday with the Unicorns, and they liked us, and they invited us to play with them on the Monday. And we went, so we traveled with them to play with them on this Monday. And people that booked the gig said that they did want us to play. Because obviously, you know, a band can't just turn up and say we want this band to play. But the funny story about that is 2 years later, they constantly tried to book us. We said no every time because we thought it was funny. And then the Tuesday we played, and then Wednesday we broke up because it was just one of those things. But it seemed to be Ghosts in the Machine. But it seemed to be... people kind of liked it, and so we would play every couple of months some kind of gig or something, and eventually people liked it a bit more, and we were all just, you know, 17-year-olds with no money, so a deal seems like a funny idea. So we kind of set ourselves almost like a box, a net of what a possible Test High School sound could be, and wrote the album individually, like designated like three whatever songs, and even that fell through. So when we were recording it, I'd start doing a song that I wrote, get bored, and I'd be like, oh, Sam, do you want to do vocals on this? Because like, I can't be bothered. And so Sam would go and do the vocals and vice versa, and that's how the album was made.
I have to say, of all the long stories I've heard, the interview's over, we did it, we've got it all. But what's interesting is that so many artists, the mix is that they've had classical training in a zillion instruments, and then they played in hardcore bands, but then they found their way to more popular music, to more pop. And I've never quite figured out that trajectory, but it's pretty wild. But, you know, I saw you play the other night, and actually your first performance on the opening night of the festival, and the concept, you know, of course, we read all the press releases and everything's, well, you know, Lightspeed is a buzz artist. And what I discovered in watching you is that is not the point for you at all.
Yeah.
It is so completely not you, and you could care less.
Yeah, I'm glad that comes through. I worry people might think I care sometimes. But yeah, I'm glad that definitely comes across.
Yeah. And especially when folks are so prone to categorize the music, the reviews that I've read so far, everybody's trying to pin you down, and we'll get to the reasons why, because there are some obvious, you made some obvious choices for this album, which we will get to in a few minutes. But it's what do you think, do you read your own reviews?
I try not to. Every now and then I type in Lightspeed Champion Sucks in Google just to see what happens.
Yeah, and you know, on your MySpace site, you obviously confused people by putting grunge, classical, and power pop.
But I mean, I think that's accurate.
Which is accurate. But you know, for people, you know, for the less intelligent consumer, you're messing with their brains in a good way.
yeah, it's true.
You've had a lot of breakups. I think you've broken up more bands than any human being in a lifetime.
That's, I mean, you know, I just, my theory on this, I've tried to explain to people, is that it's more like musical projects. Everything I do is always an experiment.
Right.
It's always an experiment. And to me, to be in a band means that a group of people connect on one level musically. So no matter what it is, say these people will mesh together and that will form a block of music. Now, if that band was to do a second album, unless they're maybe brothers or really good friends, you know, because usually if you're, when you have best friends and your musical taste usually grows with those people, in which case your music then can develop and it probably will develop. But if you're just a group of people that meet together, your next album will most likely then, if it's different, it's either a conscious decision of you saying, we have to do something different, which I've always found is a ridiculous concept, because why do you have to do something different? You should do whatever comes naturally. And that's the main reason why I break a band up, because if I connect to people on a musical level, then the chances are, if I did stay in a band with them, every album would sound the same, which isn't a problem. I don't think it's a problem at all when bands do the same album, because it's the same band. It means they're just doing what's coming.
What their sound is.
Yeah, people always go on about things like, you know, so even Interpol, they say things like, oh, well, you know, their third album just sounds like the second one. Well, it's the same four people.
Yeah, and let's face it, his vocals are pretty definitive.
Yeah, you know, and if I think that's...
And if you like them, which I like them,
yeah,
then they're great.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I'd rather that than them say, well, you know, we thought we've done two albums the same, so we should do the third one before we make it into a prog album. There's no reason you should do that. You should just do whatever comes naturally to you, and that's why I break up bands.
That's a good reason. Now, is the album out here yet? Because I know I got my advance. When did it come out?
Yeah. It came out February 6th, 5th.
Do you think that real people don't come here and it's just all about the buzz, and that the audience you had here, did you feel like you, you probably didn't, but did you perceive they were looking at you differently than the typical audience you're going to see when you actually play?
Yes, but you know, I've learned not to generalize, because there are a lot of people who are from Austin, from around Texas, and even, you know, people not from around here who have come. There are still people in the world that like music, I guess is what I'm saying, and they do exist, and I should try not to forget them. But it's a good 2% of the people.
The interesting way, you started the record very purdy, and so I do always play it with Galaxy of the Lost. So that was kind of, I know a lot of classic albums, you know, the Beatles would do that, a lot of classic artists would do that. They'd give you that little 35-second intro thing that's almost like the little overture to the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I'm a huge movie fan, and I'm a huge musical fan, and so I like the ideas of pieces coming and going. Themes coming in and out. Even on the Test Icicles album, we had kind of stuff like that. There was that organ. There's an organ thing, which was it was actually the chords of Boa versus Python. I think it came in at the end, if you let it play, of another song in the album. So like stuff like that is just like cool. And we actually, a funny thing that people may not even notice, that we got the idea from Good Charlotte. And that is a fact.
Oh,
to do that on that album, we bought their album at the time whenever we did that, and they had this had an organ thing, which was like a reprisal of a song. And we thought, oh, that's amazing.
But you made a really conscious decision to make a vital change from the last round of music, and you went and worked with the folks at Saddle Creek and all of that. So what made you decide to do that?
They asked me. That's really, yeah. Like, it's, I'm like a really kind of like, when it comes to my songs, I'm happy once I've wrote them. Like, everything else to me is just kind of whatever. Everything's always accidental, and I didn't go searching for people. I wasn't even gonna.
But did you hear stuff from Saddle Creek and say, hey, you know, I want to do this?
Oh, only maybe 2005, because I was a big Ugly Organ fan. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe even earlier, because I was really into The Faint when we were writing the Test Icicles album, because I think Dance Macabre had just come out. No, it's never really... my mind doesn't really work like that. It's almost too complicated for my mind to think like that. Everything with me is literally, I think something sounds cool. Do you know what I mean? Even if it's something like Mike Mogus got given my CD and he called me up and then we spoke on the phone and through email for about 10 months. And then he's like, eventually he was like, well, do you want to come out and record it? So I was like, you know, sure. Like, on everything I do is just because I think it's cool. And it's funny that I've noticed lately, people analyze certain things about me and always come to the wrong conclusions. They never go to the most simplest of conclusions for a 20-year-old or 22-year-old doing anything, which is that they think it's cool.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and even so, you didn't conform, because, you know, you look at some of the song titles, and I can say one of them British, and I can say this on the radio. I can't say the real word, but I can say all the shite, and I don't get in any trouble for that. You know, Devil Tricks for a Bitch, Let the Bitches Die. Fun songs to introduce on the radio.
When I write, basically, back then, anyway, when I demo songs, now I've gone back to being 14 again. When I write songs now, I don't record them. I'm trying to keep them in my head. But at that point, I was just writing songs. You know, I didn't know an album was going to be happening, so I was just writing songs, like, for fun. But when I save them on, like, you know, a GarageBand or demoing, I don't have titles. I have, like, so something comes in, so I'll be like, oh, God. But I still do this now, actually. I press, you know, the save button. Then I'm like, oh, Let the Bitches Die.
That's a good name. That's as good a title as anything else.
And, you know, it's a year since I've gone to record it, and it's been referenced as Let the Bitches Die on CDs given to Domino or to, like, you know, Mike. And, to you know, when I'm talking to other people who are going to play on it, it's called Let the Bitches Die. We're then writing, like, you know, string parts for it, and it's still called Let the Bitches Die. It gets to the point where you can't change it to The Sun Has Come Down. You know, like it.
But isn't that almost the same song? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So, you know, it happens, and so I was just like, you know, whatever.
No, but the humor of it was not lost on me.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, but it's also wonderful that the record company is more than willing to put out the record you recorded.
Yeah. No.
Because you didn't have them saying, well, you've got to have this producer. You delivered them a record, and they said, we think it's a great record. We want it.
Yeah.
So
there,
I think
there's one song though that they really wanted me to record, and I just didn't do it, and I didn't tell them until the album was done, and it was gonna be the first single, I had recorded it before. I demoed it twice, like in London, like in full band, and it was gonna be released, and then they're like, oh, you know, so you should, you know, the list of songs to definitely have in the album. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, cool, I'll do that. And then, you know, album's finished, and they called it up. Like, yeah, so, yeah, what's such and such sounding like? I was just like, oh, I didn't record it.
They loved you for that, I am sure. We've invented this thing we call a musical sandwich. And what it is because I do want to inform my listeners of what's in your brain, it's two of your songs is the bread, and then fillings by anything else you want to play in between.
Okay, well, the first song I think you should play is a song called One Day Records 2. I did an album which I wrote and recorded in 5 hours, and it's online. I can send you the MP3 because I can send it to you. It's called One Day Records 2. We actually played it live a couple of times last year, but this version is just all completely GarageBand. But I'm actually going to re-record it for some kind of special release. But it's an interesting song, so you can open up with that one. Then after that, you should play Perfect Situation by Weezer, which is a song that I've been covering the last 2 days. After that, you should play Web in Front by Archers of Loaf. Okay, then after that, Fireman by Lil Wayne, which is like a great, great song. Then after that, you should play Till I Collapse by Eminem. It's the rapping wise, the lyrics on that song, it's
great song.
Every time it blows my mind. So, okay, that song. After that, if you could play Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack.
Oh man, that's a staple on my show.
Yeah, so play that, and then after that, if you can play, there's a guy called Alan Gorga, and he did the soundtrack to The Planet Sauvage, Fantastic Planet. So there's a piece on that, which is, if I can remember the right. Oh, I can't remember. You can play anything off that, really.
Okay.
Off the whole soundtrack, no, it's problem. Amazing. Then play Attic Eiffel by the Pixies. Okay. Then if you can play Left Behind by Slipknot. Then if you can play Do It by Nelly Furtado. Oh, Private Eyes by Hall & Oates, which is a magnificent song. From that, if you go into Big Love, but the 97 version by Fleetwood Mac, the one that's on The Dance, which is, it was all Lindsey Buckingham on acoustic guitar. Finger picking is like phenomenal. So there's that. And then if you can play Violent Side by Neil Young, which is off the Landing on Water album, which is out in like 1987, I think. It's like track 3 on the album. It was the final album of the Geffen years, but it's just mind blowing. But then after that, if you could play maybe Cortez the Killer, sure, by Neil Young. A Man Needs a Maid by Neil Young.
It's a Neil Young festival, ladies and gentlemen.
And then from that, you can go into Galaxy of the Lost.
He found his way back to his album. Can you believe it? That was really cool.